Hello, and welcome to Awin Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. I'm Rob Davidson, content analyst in Awin's global strategy team, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Edwards, our global strategy director. Hi, Kev.
Hi, Rob.
And we're also joined today by Rachel Tyra, head of account management for Awin US, and making her debut on the pod. Welcome, Rachel.
Hi, Rob. It took you long enough to invite me on here.
Are you enthusiastic to be here?
I am wildly underqualified, but we'll see how this goes.
But wildly underwhelmed as well.
Yes, I haven't actually listened to any previous episodes, so I also don't know what the expectation is here.
Okay, you're not supposed to say that on the podcast, Rachel.
I think I can say that.
Well, seeing as you're our representative stateside, how is America doing?
It's a loaded question. No, we're good. We're the team's been really busy. We're now just starting to return to in-person events. We're attending ASW later this year. We just attended ASE, and then we have a few other conferences coming up. So really just hoping to get back in front of clients, our agencies. We've been working on a lot in terms of agencies for the US across Awin and ShareSale.
Am I right in thinking that you've just launched your resource center for them?
We did. Earlier this year, we did launch the resource center. So we give access to any of our agencies that are actively managing programs on either Awin or ShareSale. The last numbers showed that we had more than 120 active agencies that are now using that. So they have access to network insights, new publisher lists, training materials. And then later this year, we're going to be launching a agency accreditation with both our UK and doc teams.
That's something to look forward to.
Very exciting.
Well, on the podcast today, you'll get to hear about what's happening at the cutting edge of affiliate partnerships when I speak to Rick Leek, Awin's Global Head of Publisher Development. During our chat, Rick picks out some of the most interesting and innovative partners that have joined the network recently. And we discuss what some of these new partner types indicate about the state of the channel today. Before that, though, what's been capturing your attention in the industry recently, guys? Kevin, what's caught your eye?
I suppose I'll come to my usual conversation point, which is around sort of the mass media publishers. So there was an interesting article on DigiDay talking about kind of a snapshot of futures revenue that they generated for advertisers in 2020. And I think it was approaching $1 billion worth of value that they generated for advertisers through their affiliate partners via their proprietary price comparison platform, Hawk. There's a lot of additional detail in there that I won't particularly go into, but one of the things that really stood out for me was how almost half of their revenue for retailers in Q1 this year came from articles that were published before last year. So they give an example of a mattress buying guide, which still sells 8 mattresses a day for them. So whilst they update the content slightly, it kind of, I think, that really sort of underpins the importance of sort of good quality content and SEO.
Yeah, it's a constant kind of passive income for a lot of publishers like that, isn't it? And there's a kind of neglected value, I think, from the affiliate channel sometimes around that, because you've got articles that can constantly generate those recurring revenues. And as long as you're keeping it optimized from an SEO perspective, it can still drive long-term value for you.
I think also what it's required a bit of a mindset change from their point of view as well, in that it's not just about highly trafficked sites. It's about good quality targeted content sites. So I always remember Shortlist saying that actually some of their most profitable pages are some of their don't come anywhere close to being to their highly trafficked pages, because they're obviously attracting a niche targeted audience who are in the right frame of mind to read about products and therefore potentially a little bit further down the purchase path.
Yeah. Well, since we last caught up on the podcast, Awin have announced a new strategic partnership with Taboola, the content discovery and native advertising platform. This partnership means that for any Awin publishers seeking to boost their traffic acquisition tactics via Taboola, they can receive a free £150 credit when they sign up as a new customer via Awin and deposit an initial £150 credit into their account. The timing of this new partnership actually comes in the wake of Taboola's recent launch on the stock market through a SPAC in June. And that was closely followed by their acquisition of Connexity, the marketing technology company that owns a number of familiar affiliate businesses, including the subnetwork Skimlinks and the comparison site Price Grabber. Now, interestingly, Taboola CEO Adam Singolda talked recently about how he sees the company fulfilling a role for content monetization and advertising outside of the walled garden platforms. And there really appears to be a growing divide between these two spaces and the different attributes that they can offer users, publishers, and advertisers. And hot on the heels of that news from Taboola was another new product release over at Twitter that also saw them open up new shopping options on their platform. The new shop module, as it's being called, is being tested on US audiences in English on iOS. So a relatively kind of small segment of their total global user base, but it allows brands to feature a carousel of their chosen products on their official accounts, which followers can then browse and buy all within the in-app browser. And it's yet another example of a big tech firm investing deeper into this e-commerce space. And to my mind, is yet more proof that affiliate and performance marketing is where everyone's interest now lies and where their interests are heading. Rachel, I know that you from this on the US side were highlighting just prior to starting the recording today something that Pinterest have been doing in this space as well.
Yep. So last week, Pinterest announced that they are investing in what they're calling their creator community. So introducing new tools that allow them to monetize their content, which I think is honestly just a move as well to keep up with the likes of, TikTok and YouTube, because they did previously ban the use of affiliate links with Pinterest. But I do think this is a huge opportunity for content creators and influencers really using the platform, because we did historically before the ban actually see a lot of traffic coming from Pinterest. But now they can add affiliate links and tags to videos and pins, making everything more shoppable. And similar to what you were saying just now, they kind of highlight that Pinterest users are already inclined to they have that intent to shop and to purchase. So seeing higher conversions through Pinterest.
Yeah, I think Pinterest is like a really interesting example amongst, like, I mean, they're not quite as big as the big tech firms that we kind of tend to refer to when we talk about those larger organizations, but they're of that ilk. And I think what's interesting about them, as opposed to the direction in which most of those other platforms have gone, is that I think historically they have always allowed and almost encouraged shoppers who might be kind of browsing on their platform to actually leave the Pinterest platform and go over and shop on the advertiser's site, which is obviously more traditionally what we associate with how the affiliate model works. Whereas what Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter now, what they're all seem to be doing is trying to make sure that they have this sealed environment in which the user stays and they shop on that platform. And the expectation from the brands participating in their ad solutions or e-commerce solutions, as they are now, is that they actually erect a shop and they have some presence on there where you can buy products on their platform. So the brands are really losing, I think, the kind of the ability to dictate kind of how the customer experiences their brand a little bit. It's having to kind of fit into the parameters of whatever the big platform dictates.
They seem to have a very strong loyalty as well. I mean, as someone that's never used it, I don't know. But
I don't think you're the target user of Pinterest, Kev.
No, I don't think I am. Are you saying that I'm not a female millennial?
I'm saying a lot of things.
You can unpack that in your own time, Kev.
We don't have all the time in the world.
Talking of which, I'll catch up with you both again shortly to find out what's on the horizon and coming up. But right now, it's on to my conversation with Rick Leake. Hi, Rick. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today. I wanted to kick things off, first of all, just... if you could give us a bit of an introduction about your particular role in Awin's global publisher team for the audience.
Sure. So, hi, everybody. I'm Rick, and I'm the head of global publisher development at Awin. So, my team is basically responsible, and I'm responsible for overseeing the rollout and development of new global partners who are to work with us across multiple markets, and also supporting existing partners with any expansions that they'd like to do in new markets. And then the other part of kind of the responsibility of my team and myself is to kind of continue the development and coordination to our kind of publisher development processes. So bringing all of our kind of local markets more into line, giving a more unified structure to the services that we provide our global publishers to make sure that, you know, they are getting the very best service that they possibly can. It's those two kind of things are the main core focuses. There's obviously other things that we do kind of in the background, working on various different projects within the business to kind of help move things forward. But I would say primarily it's about business development of global publishers, new and existing. And like I say, that kind of process development piece for the actual business as a whole.
Yeah, perfect. Well, we spoke to both you and many of your colleagues within the team ahead of this year's Awin report, because we were really keen to understand who are the partners that you're seeing that you're most excited about, I guess, coming into 2021. And you guys gave us loads of recommendations, lots of diversity, lots of different types of businesses that have joined the network and are now partnering with many of our brands around the globe and driving sales, brand awareness, all these kind of key metrics that a lot of advertisers are keen to capture. And for today's conversation, as a kind of follow-up piece to that, I guess I just wanted to talk a little bit more about some of those partners, pick out some of the ones that you spotlighted, and then also have you tell us a bit about any of the newer ones that you've seen over the last 7-8 months now that you're also quite excited about, because obviously this is like a constantly continuing evolution, and you're constantly seeing new emerging trends and developments in terms of those partners that are joining the network. So let's kick things off. What can you tell us about your first partner prospect pick, and just tell us a bit about how they work maybe and what you're most excited about, sure, about them?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. There's loads of partners, and the pandemic has kind of been a spur for more and more businesses, I think, to look at affiliate marketing and approaches. And we're working with some really exciting businesses. But as you mentioned, I've kind of got three here that I really like. So I'll kick off with the first one, which is Klarna. So many people may already be familiar with Klarna. My team actually did a kind of piece on Klarna recently as a partner that we recommend our advertisers to work with. And they are a fintech company, and they essentially have two core products available. The first is a payment method. So they offer a buy now, pay later service, which I think that kind of model is gaining more and more traction, and we're seeing more and more of those kind of partners. But Klarna is definitely at the moment a standout one. And that's for merchants. That's an offering for merchants. And then there's Klarna as a publisher who's offering deals to their users from within their app. And I think what excites me about Klarna is, A, not only is there rapid growth, they're a very successful business and they've achieved quite a lot over a short space of time. They're a very proactive publisher. They work very closely with my team and the local teams that they in the local markets that they work in. But I really like them as well because, you know, they have, and I think this is, you know, a real bonus for them, is they've got this closed user group of audience. So they get their users, people download the Klarna app, they start using the app, and, you know, they obviously build up a lot of first party data on the users, which enables them to do some really smart targeting, which I think is great for brands and merchants. I think, you know, they have a very kind of clear picture of customer profiles, and they are able to really be able to deliver excellent results. And they have lots of different ways. I mean, as we said before, they're big. So I think it's last kind of deck I read, they were 90 million shoppers, 32 million app downloads. So they've got a huge audience base. And then they've got different ways of leveraging. And one of the interesting ones is the Klarna Business Index, which I think makes them stand out because it allows brands to kind of pull various different levers to increase their rankings within the Klarna app, you know, and because of that, then they build up more data. Klarna is able to personalize offers more and more, and the targeting gets better and better. And it just gives brands the opportunity to really optimize the way that they work. It's kind of not just sticking it in and just showing it to all users. It becomes very targeted, you know, which obviously developers are hopefully a good return on investment. And also the kind of things that they offer within the app. I mean, it's a very slick app. I have it on my phone, you know, and they've got lots of opportunities for advertisers to work with them. You know, things like collection ads, where it shows collections of similar products, featured stores as well, inspiration banners, you know, to kind of be able to push products that you really want to. So I just think it's the breadth and variety of offerings that they have, combined with the size of audience they have, the great technology that they have, which makes them a really interesting and exciting partner. And, you know, they are continuing to expand on the network, which is great news.
Yeah, that this buy now, pay later space is one that's really hotting up in terms of the number of partners that are emerging in it. And it also skews to quite a younger audience, I think, more generally, doesn't it? It's very much kind of focused on mobile first a lot of the time, online shopping, obviously. And that tends to kind of dominate amongst maybe younger consumers. I noted previously, actually, that I think it was this week that Jack Dorsey's other company, Square, actually acquired Afterpay, who are one of the Australian buy now, pay later firms, and who we also work with, I believe. In fact, I think in a previous edition of the Aiden Report last year, we might have even featured a case study from them working out in Australia through through Commission Factory, our kind of regional partner out there.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot of partners. I think Australia is definitely a market where perhaps this might have been more prevalent than perhaps it had in Europe first. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're kind of getting more and more businesses who are coming to us with these sorts of, you know, either closed user groups in apps and then offering, you know, this payment service offering to advertisers as well. So it's kind of like a double way for them to kind of work with the advertiser. But it's quite an exciting space, and like they expect to see it grow significantly over the next 12 to 18 months and beyond.
Great. Okay, so that's Klarna. Who's your next pick?
My next one is Fidel. I really like Fidel for quite a few reasons. I think they're a great partner and an interesting partner, especially for brands who are bricks and mortar as well, because what Fidel offer is, you know, kind of frictionless card linking opportunities, which allow brands to leverage real-time payment data. And it's all done via one API. So Fidel have the connections with all of the kind of major card providers, and everything is kind of streamed very easily. So it's very easy for advertisers to be able to leverage the data that Fidel has. And I think for me, one of the reasons why I really like it is, obviously, you know, I grew up, you know, going and shopping in the high street. I obviously work in online and I shop online, but I also have a soft spot for the high street. And I think anything that can kind of help the high street is a really good thing. And, you know, this ability to be able to connect online and offline, which is what Fidel can do, I think is really good. And will hopefully, what I'd like to think is that it'll help revitalize the high street, will help, you know, give advertisers, you know, the opportunity to connect their online activity and their offline activity via these card linking opportunities. So, you know, somebody goes in store, buys something, and then automatically gets a reward on their phone. And I think as well, you know, they're able to build a more holistic picture of their customers. You know, they've got a view of what they do online, and is their behavior different when they go into a store? And do you have to target them in different ways? Do they buy different things from you in store? They only buy certain products from you online. Do they buy other products in store? And then you can obviously kind of build out, you know, your marketing strategy, your digital strategy towards, like I say, a much more holistic overview of your customers. So I think, like, they're a really good, you know, tech company. They've started working in the UK. They've got a couple of really good partnerships going. I know, like, they're looking to continue to expand. But like I say, I think for me, they're one to watch, and I'd definitely like to see kind of hopefully more advertisers picking up this opportunity and going with it. You know, like I say, I think it'd be good. Anybody who's looking to recover their bricks and mortar business after the, you know, the kind of devastation of the pandemic, I think, you know, Fidel is a great opportunity to kind of help try and do that.
Yeah, that omni-channel buzzword term that's been used for years within marketing circles, you do feel that with solutions like Fidel, that it might kind of start to bring that properly to reality. And I know that speaking to Mark Cahillo, who heads up our single view attributions solution, is actually really excited by the prospect of more of this kind of in-store activity being tied to online in a very kind of clear performance-based way, and so that you can start to measure the different types of interactions, maybe, and like you say, the different experiences from consumers when they go in store versus when they're maybe browsing online, etc., and vice versa as well, because, you know, you've got this whole notion of I think, is it showrooming or webrooming, where consumers might go into a shop, even have a look at the products, and actually decide, do you know what, I'm going to go home, I'm going to check out if I can get it cheaper online somewhere, and maybe buy it there and get a deal on the way as well. So that way of tying those experiences together is just going to be so valuable to marketers.
Yeah, I agree. I think like with Fidel as well, I think the beauty of them is the kind of general simplicity of how they work and what they offer. I mean, there's, you know, the kind of online to offline has been talked about for so long. I think it's never really taken off as much as perhaps it might have done because of the kind of technology limitations that have been there. But I think, you know, there are partners like Fidel and other businesses as well who are just constantly optimizing their technology, making things more streamlined, making things more scalable for advertisers, you know, that hopefully we'll see more and more opportunities come through this. And yeah, like you say, build out that real omni-channel view of customers.
Great. Okay, so who's your third and final pick for our conversation today?
My third and final pick. So, I mean, I suppose it's a little, in a way, it's a little similar to Klarna, but it's Revolut. And I think it's a timely one to kind of talk about now because Revolut is one of those companies that just doesn't seem to be slowing down. You know, there was that recent news that they received $800 million in funding. You know, hugely impressive company, so many opportunities, you know, kind of revolutionizing the banking world. And let's be honest, like the banking world did need a bit of a revolution. And I think, again, the way that Revolut works is so beneficial to advertisers because they have so much, again, so much data available on, you know, the people that are using the app. They have, you know, obviously the kind of banking information, all of it that can all be tied together to provide really strong targeting, you know, and being able to get in front of the right people with the right offers at the right time. And, you know, they've been kind of rapidly expanding. They're growing, you know, on the network, rolling out in more and more countries. They're rolling out their reward system, you know, across more and more. It's interesting, you know, on their website, they explain, you know, there's the FAQ section, and they kind of, you know, one of the questions that obviously they must get a lot is, why does my friend get different offers to the offers that I see? You know, and they have to explain to people, well, it's because, you know, we want to provide the most relevant offers to you. So, you know, if we see that you've got a gym subscription, we'll kind of show you sports brands. And if your friend hasn't, then, you know, maybe we won't do that. And I think, you know, in a nutshell, I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, I think they are a really powerful partner for advertisers to kind of get on board with, is because of, you know, again, their size, their scale, the simplicity of being able to work with them, and their ability to really target, you know, consumers in a very kind of interesting and deep way.
Fascinating. Yeah. Well, my final question was going to be, and it still is, don't worry, I haven't changed it, but it was about whether or not you see any emerging trends in the types of partner that are now entering our channel at the moment, and what you think this tells us about the state of the industry right now. I mean, based on the three that you've just picked, I'd say that fintech is a fairly nascent trend within the channel, because that seems to be where a lot of the new innovation is occurring.
Yes, fintech is definitely one that, you know, is continuing to grow and is kind of moving, I would say it's moving out of that sort of starter phase and is starting to move more into that mid phase and becoming a bit more mature. You know, the companies are kind of streamlining and honing the ways that they work with advertisers through their affiliate partnerships. But I mean, in terms of trends, it's interesting. So as I said at the beginning, I've noticed a huge increase in my team in the number of people, but businesses that are coming to us that want to work with us, that would be businesses that you might traditionally kind of go, well, you've never really worked in affiliate before. You know, it's their first time kind of dipping their toe into the affiliate waters. And I think it's because they've seen and the kind of noise that's been being made around the channel and its performance and its success throughout the pandemic is starting to resonate. So that's kind of one trend is, yeah, businesses that I wouldn't have kind of pegged as wanting to speak to us are now speaking to us. You know, we're kind of looking to roll them out across the business. Another one, which is a really recent one, and I don't know kind of where it's come from, but I've seen a lot of kind of delivery companies come to us and approach us. You know, we've had some really big global players in the delivery, in the package delivery space, come to us and look to kind of work in the ways that they want to work are quite interesting. You know, it's about obviously offering deals to customers that they have, you know, if they've got kind of like their databases of customer, but in one case, it's kind of like a barter agreement almost, where it's, we will promote you to our kind of users if you use us as a delivery service. So, you know, saying to the advertisers, it's a kind of, you know, you give us a service, we'll give you a service. Which is quite interesting, and we're kind of exploring that. And I'd say, you know, again, another trend in general is that I'm noticing that companies are coming to us, to the AWIN network, because they see and want to utilize our scale of advertiser partnerships. You know, I've heard quite a few times in conversations now, it's a case of, well, we could do this and we could go direct to advertisers and have direct conversations, but it's going to be a long haul and it's going to take us a long time and it's not really scalable, especially for like those startup mid-sized operators and even some of the bigger operators, you know. So they come to us and they're like, you guys have got scale. You've got all of these advertisers, you know, that work with. We want to work with them as well, and we're prepared to do it through you. And in some cases, they're prepared to kind of change their commercial model. You know, they might not be working on a CPA, but because they see the value of the scalability of the network and our kind of connections with the advertisers, they're willing to change and go, well, yeah, we'll work on a CPA. Traditionally, we wouldn't do that. You know, we'd kind of, you know, maybe work on like fixed fees or CPCs or whatever it might be. But, you know, we see an opportunity here. We think it's a good long-term investment. And they want to utilize, yeah, our scale, which is an interesting kind of trend and one I want to keep kind of capitalizing on. And I'd like to kind of get that message out there a bit more for sure.
Yeah, that's really interesting what you were saying there, actually. I think particularly when you talk about the affiliate channel, the perception of it historically was maybe that it was only for smaller businesses, startups that were looking to try to establish these relationships with brands that they wouldn't be able to directly. And so through a platform like AWINS, they could look to establish those connections that they couldn't do independently. But actually what we're starting to see maybe is more of these larger businesses who are recognizing the affiliate channel as a very streamlined, hassle-free means of connecting with advertisers and brands, trialing, experimenting with new types of partnerships they wouldn't potentially do, you know, independently themselves. And there's real value in that, in kind of testing stuff out within the affiliate channel with these brands. If it does work, fantastic, you know, kind of like double down on that. But if it doesn't, then there's not been a huge kind of amount of resource or investment wasted in kind of trying to see if it works.
No, exactly. I think, you know, the perception of the channel is obviously changing, which is a good thing. And these partners are coming to us, as you say, like for the scalability. And, you know, that's kind of where it fits in with the sort of second part of what I talked about, of what my team does and kind of does within the business, which is around, you know, developing and coordinating improvements, you know. So the idea of these companies is, well, you work with 15,000 advertisers or however many it might be, you should be really easy to scale up with. So we have to make sure that we are, and it is easy to scale up, and it is easy for our new partners to be able to kind of work with, you know, a wide variety of different advertisers. So, you know, that's why the streamlining of processes and the kind of coordination of processes across all of our markets is incredibly important. And we've been working on a few kind of things recently over the last couple of months that I think have really improved, you know, certainly for our global partners, you know, the way that they are rolled out and the coordination around that. And we're kind of getting really good feedback both from the partners themselves and internally from our teams as well, that things are kind of much more streamlined. So, you know, because at the end of the day, we all know that a network's part of the network's value is in the tracking and the technology and that kind of thing. But, you know, the other part, which sometimes maybe, I wouldn't say it gets lost, but I don't sometimes think it's as we don't shout about it as much maybe, is the facilitation of partnership creation. It's what we're there to do. We're there, we're the kind of people who go, okay, you do this, we think you should work with this person, and we do the connection. And the way that we can do that, you know, if we can do that on scale, you know, it makes it a really attractive proposition for a lot of businesses. And as we say, ones that traditionally probably wouldn't work with affiliate.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for taking the time to tell us a bit more about what you're most excited about in terms of the new partners that are joining and what the future is likely to look like. I'm certainly looking forward to seeing what next year's partner prospects list looks like. So get your thinking cap on and start thinking about who might feature in that.
Will do. Will do. Thank you very much. Cheers, Rob. Really appreciate it.
Big thanks to Rick for taking the time to tell us more about the latest partnership developments. And if you're keen to reach out to him and his team to find out more about some of the partners he highlighted there, then we'll include his contact address on the landing page for this particular episode. Just out of interest, Rachel, given your perspective on the US side of things, are there any new partners that you've come across recently locally that have caught your attention?
So I am not the most current with the publisher team in terms of specific publishers, but I do think a big trend that we're seeing is an influx of influencer partnerships and influencer publishers. So in the US alone, I think we saw more than a 30% uplift in applications from influencers, specifically YouTubers, TikTokers. And I think that is directly a result of obviously an increased adoption with social media. But we're also seeing budgets that previously sat separate from affiliate now being moved into the affiliate channel because it's easier to kind of measure the ROI, track activity. And so that has been a big trend for us. I know specifically the publisher team is also looking at a number of SaaS influencer marketing platforms. So historically, we've, you know, worked with more marketplace platforms, so the likes of RewardStyle, ShopStyle. But these are platforms that are working with our brands on a monthly fixed fee model. And the benefit there being they have a much larger influencer reach. They usually have anywhere between, you know, 3 to 10 million influencers within their platform that our brands can tap into. And then there's also the self-service aspect. So not having to work with an account manager, but being able to kind of run these campaigns yourself. And then we've also started working with kind of like brands PR teams to help with that activity.
Well, I was going to say from a personal perspective, and this is a question for both of you, because I'm quite interested in the comparison here. What are there any influencers that you follow? If you do, are, what like platforms do they tend to be on, and do they actually influence your shopping habits at all? Have you ever bought anything because an influencer has recommended it or advocated it?
This is so embarrassing. I follow so many influencers on mainly Instagram, and I can definitely say that in the last 12 months, the majority of my purchases have been influenced by those individuals. I think they're mostly food bloggers, fitness bloggers, a number of like Gymshark influencers too. And I don't know, I feel like that's just a common theme now. Like everyone's buying through Instagram. Kevin is looking at me like I'm crazy and has never considered being influenced by another human.
I was going to assume that Kevin's answer was identical to yours, actually.
He's a big Gymshark guy.
I'm just a Luddite. I'm not on any social media platforms.
Oh, Kevin. You are in the minority.
How about you, Rob?
You know, more than 60% of the population has social media.
Well, that still means 40% don't.
You're just not like every other guy.
How about you, Rob?
Yeah, I was thinking about this as Rachel was talking. Not that I wasn't listening to you, Rachel, but, I don't think that I'm massively influenced by social platforms at the moment. I mean, I use Reddit probably as the social platform of choice for me. I came off Facebook at the start of the year. And other than that, and I don't really kind of follow people on Reddit, that it doesn't kind of, the dynamic isn't quite the same maybe as a lot of other influencer platforms in that sense. So yeah, I'm probably fall more into the 40% camp with Kev at the moment.
So you're saying you're independent thinkers and you're far,
oh, no, not at all.
You're far superior than the
well,
ones
you're in, that are you're in the minority on this conversation, so
that's
but
true,
I'm also
yeah.
in the minority of this podcast.
Okay, well, that was a nice little kind of sidetrack for us for a moment there. But I wanted to highlight.
Going back to what you were talking about in terms of partnering with influencer networks. Mm-hmm. Who's driving that? Are we approaching them? Are they approaching us? Is that being led by brands saying that they wanted to track everything through a single platform, or how's that being driven?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. So it's definitely a focus of the publisher team, but I think that has come to light through, you know, influencer activity and budgets really being raised by our clients. So we're having account managers, if that topic does come up, we're kind of asking them, you know, what are the platforms that they're using, their social teams, their PR teams. And then we've kind of started a list of platforms that we're speaking to. So right now, I think we're talking to Aspire IQ, Clear, Upfluence, and then we obviously have a partnership with Maverick right now that's currently active with AWIN. So I think it's really from both sides, but I definitely see that as a trend kind of over the next 12 months.
Yeah, I wanted to highlight just some upcoming content from AWIN's perspective that listeners can look out for at the moment. I can recommend the latest episode of eMarketer's podcast, Behind the Numbers, in which Adam Ross, AWIN's CEO, is interviewed about the current state of the affiliate industry. It's a really insightful discussion, I think, particularly for those in the audience who are less familiar with our industry and why it's gaining increased interest from businesses around the world at the moment. Adam highlights the security that the performance-based ad model offers brands, as well as its data-like tracking, which stands it in good stead to some of the cookie changes that the wider ad tech industry is currently being challenged by as kind of reasons for that. You guys have both had a quick listen of that podcast as well, I believe.
I just thought it was a really nice opportunity sort of showcase for the affiliate channel, generally kind of a bit of a snapshot of where we are in 2021. I mean, typically people still see performance marketing as being synonymous with programmatic, so it's a good opportunity to, I think, to make that distinction and as you say, draw the distinction between how it's data light. Also, it's a great opportunity to talk around, you know, Adam talked about how in some respects he was sort of slightly frustrated about Google reining back on the third-party cookie move, because he feels that we're in a good position to help brands and publishers kind of deal with those challenges. Again, it was a good opportunity to talk about, you know, some of the really positive stuff that we're trying to sort of take more widely to the market about why the affiliate channel is in such a good place at the moment.
Well, do keep your eyes peeled for other upcoming content in the weeks that are coming. So including our latest single view case study highlighting the benefits of Awin's multi-touch attribution solution, and intermittent Awin Talks co-host Lee Metters, who I'm sure will be guesting on here again very soon, also has a new article out shortly focused on the growing wave of brand-to-brand partnerships that we're seeing in the channel currently. So look out for those pieces on the Awin site soon. And that's it for this week's edition. Thanks for joining Kev, Rachel and I. And if you liked what you heard, please do give us a rating on whichever platform you choose to listen to us on. We'd be hugely grateful. And in the meantime, we look forward to seeing you again very soon. It's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Kev.
Bye.
And goodbye from Rachel.
Did I pass the test? Can I join again?
We'll find
Maybe.
Out.
We'll put a pin in that.
Oh, bye guys.